So the subject for tonight is the Buddha's toolbox. Just before I came on the retreat yesterday, my wife went to feed the chickens. We have a few chickens and some chicks. Not many. She went off to feed the chickens. And all of a sudden there was a scream. So I ran over to see what was happening. And in the small chicken house that we have was an enormous snake, which I have never seen such a big snake in Israel, ever. And the chickens. And the kind of, there was a dynamic there which was so weird. The snake was trying to get out. We were coming in. The chickens were running in circles. And no one quite knew what to do with each other. We didn't know how to get the snake out without the chickens running away. So there was a kind of moment of paralysis she took, you know, what do we do in this crazy situation? And I suddenly realized, it's Tisha B'Av. It's okay. Things like that can happen on Tisha B'Av. And I said, look, let's trust. This is too much, especially just before I have to go to the retreat. Let's trust. It'll work itself out. So we went away. And it did. The snake somehow went away, found a way out, and the chickens were fine, and everything was fine. But I thought about that because I want to talk about trust tonight, but also some other things, some other tools of Dharma, which we can use in our daily life, but also are crucial, are really important for our retreat experience. I think it's fair to understand that we are all in a state of chronic existential insecurity. It's the nature of the living experience. It's already come out for many of you in the retreat, or some of you feeling the vulnerability of life, feeling things are shaky, feeling things are not grounded. Already in the first day, some tears have come, some concerns, some fears, some anxieties, some sadness. And we have these concerns, and we are vulnerable. And we find ourselves in the middle of life constantly struggling just to keep things going, just to hold the whole picture, just to make things right, just to make our life okay. And we're busy with it. And we're only busy with it because underneath it's not okay. We feel everything's shaking, so we are busy sorting our life. Generally, the tools we use to help us with this situation, with this existential situation, are the tools of thinking. We use tools of our education. We read books. We go to psychologists, we talk to each other, we share, we use language. But a lot of that is in the world of concept. And with the world of concept, we try and solve our problems. With the world of thinking, with the world trying to work it out. What do I do now? What's the best way forward? How do I get the snake out without the chickens also running out? How do I work this whole thing out called my crazy life? And we use intense thinking for this. But someone once said, all my life I've been waiting for my real life to begin if only I could get rid of all the obstacles and problems. And then all of a sudden, I realized the obstacles and the problems are my life. We use our thinking mind to study reality, and in the end, we actually don't know our mind and we don't know reality. And we just try and work it out. The Buddha taught that we have much more important powers, tools to use in addition to the thinking mind. We can develop other ways of being with ourselves so that the problems dissolve, that the problems are not a problem anymore, because the mind looking at the problem has changed. The mind that identifies a situation in the life as a difficulty, the mind changes, and the situation is no longer the same. And these are these tools, these powers, are the essence of Dharma, the essence of the Buddhist teaching. The Buddhist teaching is not to be studied. We don't want to come to spiritual life with more concepts. And even that, in just interpreting the spiritual life of the Buddhist Dharma as more concepts to try and solve our life problems. We need other tools. And that's why we come to meditation. Meditation is the beginning of expanding our powers, in a way unfolding our wings, our non-conceptual wings. I must say that in the Buddhist world, there are still, until today, many, many people, practitioners, monks, who still see Dharma as concept. And we, fortunately, in the Vipassana community, are beginning to go beyond the concept, to actually teach practice. There is a famous poem by a Japanese Zen poet that said, "Every day people examine Dharma. They endlessly chant complicated suttas, texts. But before doing that, though, we should learn how to read the love letters sent by the wind and the rain and the snow and the moon." So we are here to read the love letters, the Mikhtavim Ahava, from ourselves, from the life around, from the breath, from the body, from the atmosphere, from non-conceptual touch with life. So what are the non-conceptual tools, the tools besides thinking? Well, the first one that we've already practiced, and we've already just started to practice, is attention, tsumat lev, paying attention, just the power of attention. This is not the power of interpretation, parshanut, this is simple attention. We bring the automatic, the world of the automatic function of our life, moment to moment, we bring it to awareness. We open the box that's usually closed to us of the small events, namely our life. We pay attention to things that are below the usual level of of awareness, or too quiet, or too subtle. We read the love letters, exactly, but we read the love letters that our breath is sending us, our body is sending us, the birds outside are sending us. And we start with the body and the breath because we start with the ordinary things. If we started with big spiritual lights and fireworks and dramas, we'd be actually under illusion. We'd be still with concepts about spirituality, concepts about liberation. We can be so easily stuck with concepts about freedom, when actually the freedom is available so close to us that all we need to do is look at our breath. And what is closed becomes open. It's very close. It's not the Messiah. It's right here, but we need attention for this. The Buddha said, when going forward and coming back, when bending and extending one's arms, when carrying, when eating, when chewing, when walking, when standing, when sitting, when lying down, when sleeping, and when waking up, one is completely mindful with clear comprehension, clear clarity. We are completely mindful. We know what's going on with clarity. We're going to be talking a lot about that. I don't want to talk much more about it now, this evening, because we will talk about it more and more during the course of the next few days together. But I would say that there is one power. We can call it the power of now, like Eckhart Tolle has discussed. Maybe power is a wrong word. Maybe tool is another word you can use. It's not power like male, but it's, in a sense, it is a power, or it's a facility that we can use to solve our problems. And the power of now, the power of attention, the power of noticing, is a powerful tool for our life. It makes everything available to us. It's all here. It's all okay. My back hurts. I know it. My breath. I know it. I'm tired. I know it. I'm distracted. I know it. I'm here in the middle of my life. That's the tool of attention. But there is one tool that's close to attention that we also use. And that is samadhi. Samadhi is the second tool. Samadhi means concentration. And so here we not only use our attention, but we continue with it. We keep going with it. We push a little bit the boundary. We don't just have an attention on the hand for a moment, and then it's on something else, then it's on something else, then it's on something else. One breath, one thought, one this, one that, we actually cool down, we calm down, we keep going, we keep connecting to these quiet places in us. So the tool of samadhi is the tool of concentration, the tool of being steady. We don't just have one breath and then go. We are with it for longer time. It's a Tibetan image that our samadhi is like a cow and a calf in the field. The cow knows exactly what's going on with its calf. The calf is wandering around eating, the cow is wandering around eating, but the mother knows what's going on with her child. Never leaves for 1 minute some awareness, I know what's going on. That's like us. We keep the thread of awareness. That's samadhi. That creates calmness. That creates steadiness. There's a story, modern Zen story about a Zen teacher in America who was sitting, drinking a cup of coffee and reading a newspaper. And along came one of his students and said, "Master, you told us to do one thing at a time. But you're doing two things. You're reading a newspaper and you're drinking a cup of coffee at the same time. How can you do that?" So the teacher said, "Yeah, indeed. I did tell you to do one thing at a time. When you read the newspaper, just read the newspaper. When you're drinking coffee, just drink coffee. And when you're reading newspaper and drinking coffee, just read the newspaper and drink coffee." So, be with it. Samadhi, concentration, doesn't just mean like intense, like as if we're watching a computer cassette for hours. It means being there continuously, being with it. Another tool in the toolbox is the tool of energy, the tool of our motivation, our energy. It helps us keep going. We need some patience. We need some tolerance. We'll have a bad sitting. Never mind. We need patience. It's not going to happen immediately. Things don't change so fast. Just think how many years we've been spending on another way of thinking. And we've only been here one day to learn the Buddha's tools. But we've been maybe 30 years learning the tools of education, language, the concept, struggling in ordinary life. So give it a chance. We need to have patience. And with it, some energy. The energy, we already discussed it a little bit. The energy is not energy of, I'm going to break this wall, I'm going to get this breath, even if it's the last thing I do, it's not that. It's not that. That just creates tension in us. The energy is much more like a chicken sitting on eggs. Well, second time I used chickens today. Must be in my mind. But there is a sutta, a traditional Buddhist text, says exactly that. Never mind, it says, how much the mother hen, tanegolet dogeret, wants the chicks to come out. And she says, oh, I want the chicks to come out. I can't sit here anymore. I'm so fed up. Day after day I have to sit and the chickens don't come and I want to hear the claws on the shell and I want to hear the shell breaking. No, I can't sit here anymore. Doesn't make any difference. The mother hen has to sit there 21 days. Otherwise, no babies. There's a beautiful quote from Rumi about this. He says, just keep knocking on the door. Eventually, the joy inside will open a window and look out to see who's there. Beautiful quote, I'll read it again. Keep knocking on the door. Eventually, the joy inside will open a window and look out to see who's there. So we talked about the tool of attention. We talked about the tool of steadiness. Keep going. We talked about the tool briefly of energy. Of energy which is not pushing, not struggling, not fighting, but in balance. And we'll talk more about these tools in the course of the retreat. The fourth one I want to talk about a bit more today, tonight, is the one, the tool of trust. Trust, emun, trust. Trust is what helps us to move out of depending on the world of concepts to solve our problems. We can begin to feel better with our life without them, instead of concepts. Trust helps us to drop a lot of our defenses, our walls, our fears, our anxieties. At the beginning of the retreat, Iran talked about the refuge, the refuges, the importance of feeling a refuge here, a home. The importance of feeling machaseh, a shelter. This is not something artificial that we have to pretend there is a shelter. The shelter is here. We just have to notice it. Our problem is that the primary insecurity of our life keeps coming up all the time. The neurology research on the brain has come to the conclusion that the brain is built out of a low-level constant anxiety. That's how it's made. We don't need to be there, because at the same time, we have trust. We trust, when we take a step, we trust the earth that will hold us. The tree trusts the earth. The leaves fall from the tree. The sun comes up. The moon comes up. The world goes round. There is trust in the world. The world wouldn't work without it. There is something that trusts, that connects, that holds everything together. There is something in us that trusts. When we're born, the first thing we do is run to the breast. The breast trusts the baby trusts the breast. The mother trusts the baby trusts the mother. We start with trust. There is also primal insecurity. We don't know what will happen tomorrow. We are not sure. We don't know why karma sort of kicked us here into this planet. And we don't know why and how karma will also take us to pieces again and take us away. We know nothing about that. But trust is an antidote, a medicine for primal insecurity. Usually we want to surround ourselves with protection. We say, if we have money in the bank, mashkanta is paid, food in the frigidaire, my family doesn't argue with me all the time, I have some work. There isn't bombs falling. Then I can relax. Maybe turn on the television. I'm all right. I have trust. I trust the world. And the minute one of those things goes wrong, the world is so terrible. It's so such a terrible world. The world is against me. I'm having such a hard time. It all doesn't work. The world is against me. Instead of these external, depending on externals to give us a sense of trust, a sense of home, we can begin to open trust inside us. We trust the world. We trust ourselves. We experience the breath coming, the next breath coming. We experience ourselves walking on the earth. We experience our connection. We experience the sun and the moon. And there builds slowly sense of being at home with ourselves and the world. And it's a training. That's why it's a tool. Because if we learn this tool here of trust, we take it out into our life, and if we don't pay the mashkanta, or if we don't have peace, or we don't have what we want, or it doesn't destroy us. It doesn't create for us a miserable life, because there's trust in us, which is fundamental, which is in the ground, in the base of our being. There is trust in life and in death. It's all right. And that's one of the most special, powerful tools that we can learn here. We learned that in the first evening, yesterday, when Iran talked about refuge. And if you remember what he said, refuge in the Buddha is the refuge in our mind, the Buddha mind in us. It's being refuge in our ability to take life as it is, to see life as it is and be all right with it, whatever it throws at us. That's the Buddha mind. Awareness in the mind, ability to take the world, be all right with the world, be there with it. And trust in the Dharma, trust in the process. Trust that there is a process here which is holding us. Some of you may feel, I don't know what's going on, I'm sitting here for hours, and I don't know why I'm here, and it's all difficult, my back is beginning to hurt, and I'm tired, and it's hot, and it's cold, and don't... Wait a minute. This is the time to pull out of the toolbox of the Buddha trust. I trust this process that's happening to us together. I will give it some space. I will be patient. I will trust the Buddha. I will trust the situation. I talked about yesterday a few words about how values help us. The values of kindness, the values of support, the quietness, the values of volunteering from the staff, the values of not selling Dharma, that no one's asking you for anything. These values help trust. They help us to experience trust. And that trust brings us to, brings progress in our path. Fundamentally, we have to trust what happens. We may cry. We may laugh. We may have unhappy experience. We may have happy experience. We can't control it. We don't want to control it. We want to allow the truth. But underneath, let's trust that whatever comes up for us, that's its time to come up. Whatever comes up in the mirror, that's okay. I trust the nature of things. It's a powerful tool for the retreat and for our daily life as well. Something in us wants to be healed. Something in us wants goodness. Something in us already trusts. We just need to open that to reduce the power of primal insecurity, fears, concerns, worries, and so on, dependence. Just reduce the voices and allow the voice of trust to arise in us. I want to quote Rilke. He says, the poet Rilke, he says, we have no reason to mistrust our world, for it is not against us. It has its fears, but they are our fears. It has its empty places, but they belong to us. Perhaps all the dragons of our lives are princesses who are only waiting to see us both beautiful and brave. Perhaps everything terrible or difficult is in its deepest being something helpless that wants our love. So in a word, trust allows us to open, to take down our defenses, haganot, to open to what is, to be more ready to receive what is, what comes up, what appears for us. And as we do that, the heart opens, and we feel trust ourselves and trust others and trust the Dharma and trust the world, and something sweet, metikut, some sweetness arrives. The fifth of the tools in the Buddha's toolbox is wisdom, insight. And again, this is something we will talk about more during the week. At this time, we can call it our curiosity, sakranut, our curiosity to explore what's actually happening. What is going on with me? And I mentioned yesterday that our practice is looking in the mirror. Even if we see at the beginning, big mess. And we go, ich, what a mess. But the second time we look, maybe we'll be curious. That's me? Okay. I'm ready. Let me look. What's going on? What's happening? What's underneath? As we sit quietly, what's going on? What's going on in this mind-body field? The breath is a gate. The breath is a doorway. Let's go through the doorway to the garden on the other side and explore. What's going on in us? The wisdom is the question. How am I right now? I'm sure in one way or another we're beginning to ask this question. How am I? Later on we might ask another question. Who am I? But we'll leave that for the third or the fourth day. But at least now, for now, let's ask, how am I? There's another beautiful quote by Rumi, which I chose because it's also about knocking on the door. And I don't know the exact words, but what I remember. He says, "Keep knocking. I kept knocking on the door to heaven. Eventually it opened. I realized I was on the inside." It's beautiful. It really brings tears to my eyes every time I remember this. Quote, "I kept knocking on the door to heaven. Eventually it opened. And I realized I was on the inside." Vipassana is about seeing clearly the nature of things. It's not about technique. It's about insight. It's about looking in the mirror. It's about how am I, and then who am I. We will be moving towards that during the course of the retreat. For now, let's keep And let's focus on three of the tools. Tool of attention, the tool of samadhi or steadiness or concentration, keeping going, and the tool of trust. Later on in the retreat, we'll talk more about the tool, especially the tool of energy and the tool of insight. It's true that we may be more tending towards one or the other of these tools. It may be easier for one person to trust. It may be easier for another person to have more concentration. It may be easier for another person to have more inquiry. It's the way their mind works. That's okay. It doesn't matter. We have more than one tool, and therefore we have more than one ability. We can use different tools as we like. But some balance is needed. It's helpful, for example, that we trust, but we don't go too far just with trust. Trust needs to be a little balanced with wisdom. Otherwise, trust turns into belief, emun turns into emuna, and we're in another territory altogether. We're in a territory of belief, 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 as if that will solve our problems. No, trust is a tool. And belief can take us to another place which is not, can not, sometimes not be helpful for us. Can be helpful. But the Buddha was quite clear that trust is a power, but he didn't encourage belief. Because belief, in a way, closes us and not opens us. So the trust is helpful, but we don't want to get too involved in belief. I believe this, believe that, and therefore I'm all right. Same with wisdom. Can lead to delusion, can lead to more concepts. So we have to be in balance. The breath is the place to start to develop these powers of mind, the breath and the body. It's here is where we begin. The breath and the body is a doorway. We have to start somewhere. But the powers are always behind. The power of attention, the power of calm, steady, samadhi, the power of trust, the power of energy, and the power of wisdom or insight. They're always with us. They are our partners in the spiritual journey. And they are with us right at the beginning of the journey until right at the end of the journey. They are the powers that take us to enlightenment, to awakening. We ride on those powers to awakening. They are always with us. So we just have to be aware of them and let them emerge in this retreat, and also in our life. Thank you. So let's take a few minutes of quiet.